Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Think you've heard everything going on around you? Apple TV Plus's new docuseries Earth Sounds may have you think again. Hear executive producer Alice Williamson and series producer Sam Hodgson when they join me next live from England. It's week 2 of Black Fam, the new TV series for all ages with Whoopi Goldberg as equity partner and creative consultant. We'll connect with founder and chief executive Larry Adams next half hour. Our first hour 2 subject, The Advocate Channel, organized with the assistance of media consultancy Infinity Partnerships. More from Infinity Chief Executive George Manny at the top of the hour. And NBC offers the next episode of Deal or No Deal Island tonight. We'll catch executive producer Sean Laughlin in an internet radio exclusive interview in our final 30 minutes. Also ahead, Dick Wolf and Netflix's new nonfiction arrangement, Prime Video gets game show with Fox, and our new classic trivia question. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and present on 46 great podcast destinations, including our newest one, True Fans. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Our opening hour is brought to you today by BlendJet, the portable blender letting you make fresh smoothies, shakes, or mixed drinks on the go wherever you go. 55 degrees at the top of the hour, cloudy skies during the metro area on this Monday afternoon of March. We welcome you to the program all about TV's current and future. We have a great two-hour edition in store for you. And again, we want to welcome those of you joining us on our newest podcast affiliate, True Fans. That's T-U-R-E-F-A-N-S. Thank all of you there for joining us. We appreciate you bringing us aboard for your wonderful entertainment and illumination, and we hope you make us a regular habit. And for all the rest of you out there, we hope you stick around for the next 2 hours because we got some great guests in store for you from all over the place. And we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone and dial in. Yes, our phone line is working. It's 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio. And our chat room is working as well. It's SimonApple04 by name. You will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Use the phone or the room. Either way, you interact with our guests. And we will interact with the two people from Earth Sound, Alice Williamson and Sam Hodgson. They'll join us live from Bristol, England, after these news notes. Prolific executive producer Dick Wolf has a new outpost for his unscripted output, Netflix. Wolf reached a deal to put a pair of homicide docuseries on the service this morning. Netflix will premiere the first one March 20th, profiling 5 notable murder cases in New York. Second, dealing with murder cases from Los Angeles, will start later this year. Wolf's production company will work with Alfred Street Industries on both series. Upcoming Prime Video game show, The 1% Club, will get a second shot to reach viewers through Fox. The series, be hosted by Emmy-winning actor Patton Oswalt, will have each episode broadcast on Fox after its Prime Video debut. Prime Video has yet to disclose when The 1% Club, adapted from a BBC Studios-scripted format, will premiere. An Amazon executive suggested in a press release that other Prime Video and freebie content may get a similar distribution pattern. Mega content service, followed soon after by broadcaster cable network, in the months ahead. Telemundo is a few months away from starting a new Spanish-language news channel, running exclusively through smart TV sets and multi-channel bundles. Noticias Telemundo Ahora, that's Telemundo News Now, plans to launch this May with at least 5 hours of live news coverage per day. Now, quickies, Fox and Fremantle will co-develop a new Baywatch series in partnership with original co-creators Michael Burke, Douglas Schwartz, and Gregory Benand. No, we don't know if David Hasselhoff is going to be involved in some way. Spring Hill, LeBron James' production company, will develop a trio of sports documentaries for the History Channel. Two will spotlight Jesse Owens' historic competition during the 1936 Berlin Summer Olympics, and iconic athlete Jim Thorpe. Pluto TV is the latest multi-channel bundle affiliate of Motor Trend Television. With Pluto TV, the Warner Brothers Discovery-owned network now reaches more than 100 U.S. households. And that's 100 million U.S. households. 100 million U.S. households. And breaking news in the past hour, Tracker, which launched after the Super Bowl on CBS last month, will return this fall for a second season. We had the wonderful opportunity pre-Super Bowl, that's pre-Super Bowl weekend, to interview executive producer and director Ken Olin, yes, the former co-star of 30-something. If you missed that episode, you can catch it at blogtalkradio.com/televised, lobbytelevised.com, our website, and all of our podcast destinations. And that is news notes for today. Now joining us live from Bristol, England, an airway exclusive, executive producer of the new Apple TV Plus series Earth Sound, that's Alice Williamson, and series producer Alice and Sam, welcome in.
Hey, how you
Thanks,
doing?
Thanks, Simon. Thanks very much.
It's a pleasure to have you both. And Alex, we'll start with you. What's been the reaction so far to Earth, not only here in the United States, but around the world?
Yeah, very positive. Thank you very much. We went live on Apple TV Plus about a week ago, and the reviews we've got so far have been fantastic. And I think for us as a series, it's been a series unlike any other that I've ever worked on. It's, you know, making television, it's all around trying to get those shots and get those visuals. And on this series, what we've tried to do is not just do that, but obviously capture the sounds of the planet too. So it's a full immersive experience, taking the audience into the natural world. And the ambition for the series was to create a piece of natural history unlike anything else that the audience had experienced or heard before, and getting the audience to hear our planet like never before. So 12 parts on Apple TV Plus. The stories are will hopefully blow the audience away. We show the audience how animals use sound in weird and wonderful ways. So as visual species, we're used to using sound to communicate, but you know what we discover in the series is that animals use sound to navigate, to migrate. They use it as a weapon. There's even a little spider that uses sound like a sedative. And then the way they make sounds is mind-blowing. So birds that use their wings like a violin string. We have exploding shrimps. We've got bugling elk. So there's something for everyone. And the kind of concept is there's more to nature than meets the eye. So I think by watching the show, the audience will have a new appreciation for the natural world and the crazy, weird, and wonderful sounds that fill it.
Sam, because this is a show that is much for the ears, as you said, as the eyes, what is an Earth sound? How did you and Alex come to decide, okay, this is a new dimension of how we see Earth or hear Earth that we should know?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think one of the impetus for making the series in the first place was this this idea that there's a whole world of sound out there that our human ears just don't pick up on, and as sort of humans we've got a very sort of narrow hearing range, and in the animal world creatures are calling far higher than we can hear, far lower than we can hear. They're making tiny sounds we can only just detect, and for the first time, the microphone technology and the audio technology allows us to sort of tune into those conversations. So it felt like there was a leap forward in terms of the tech that allows us to capture these sounds. What we wanted to do was just sort of showcase the most extraordinary sounds that the animals make. And for one of those, we were filming. We wanted to record the sounds of dolphins. And dolphins' sort of echolocation has been recorded before, sort of many times. But we wanted to record it in a new way. So we were working with a team off the coast of Costa Rica. And the challenges with filming sound is, you know, you can put a hydrophone, a sort of underwater microphone, in the water off the back of the boat, but actually what you're recording is a lot of the sound of the water slapping against the bow of the boat, so it's very hard to get clean sound. So what we did was we invented a sort of buoy system with sort of floating hydrophones, and we tried to float that into a sort of super pod of dolphins, spinner dolphins off the coast of Costa Rica. It took a lot of time, and lots of the sounds we recorded were not easy to get. But eventually, we managed to record these dolphins' calls, and we got them back into the edit here in Bristol. And what we noticed when we looked at a spectrogram, which is a sort of sound graph of what the sound looks like, is there's all the normal sounds we could hear. So we could hear the clicks and whistles that we normally hear, but there was also a whole line of sound at the top of the spectrogram above our hearing that we just weren't picking up on. So we used a technique called pitch shifting, which brings those sounds down into the human hearing range. And what we revealed was a whole new world of dolphin communication that sounds very different to the usual clicks and whistles we hear. This is how dolphins are communicating, but we haven't been sort of aware of previously. So I think with all our stories, we weren't just going out to record sounds that had been recorded before. We were going out to record them in new and exciting ways to bring to bring the sort of natural world to the ears of the audience in a very different way.
Mm. We're speaking with Alex Williamson and Sam Hodgson, their executive producer and series producer, respectively, of the new Apple TV Plus docuseries, Earth Sounds, that premiered last month, available on smart TV sets, smart devices, and multi-channel bundles. Both our guests join us live from Bristol, England, where it just turned prime time at the top of the hour, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. Time to have with you live from New York. Let's hear from you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. First of at least two episodes coming your way this week. We'll be back with you for sure on Friday. We may have a special episode on Thursday. We're waiting to get confirmation of some possible guests for it. And for sure next week, we'll be with you with a triple header, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And next Wednesday, speaking of Apple TV Plus material, one of our guests will be James Swanson. He is the best-selling author of Manhunt, The 12-Day Chase for Lincoln's Killer, which has just been turned into a new Apple TV Plus miniseries that premieres in a couple of weeks. James will be with us as our lead guest, and we will offer down the road as a classic trivia prize his brand new book, The Deerfield Massacre, A Surprise Attack, A Forced March, and the Fight for Survival in Early America. James Swanson, the author and the executive producer of Apple TV Plus's new series, Manhunt, The 12-Day Chase for Lincoln's Killer, with us exclusively next Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. Alex, in order to do this series, I would guess you would have to have special audio equipment that was very versatile. Was that the case, that the audio equipment used could take any, let's say, sound no matter where it was coming from? Or did you have to find that maybe you had certain equipment to cover this animal's sound versus taking another approach to another animal?
Yeah, that's a great question. So across 4 years, the series was in production for 4 years. We recorded sounds on all seven continents of the planet, and we captured over 3,000 hours of audio for 6 hours of television. So we went out there and re-recorded a lot of audio in all sorts of environments. So what we discovered over the course of the production was pretty much every animal needed its own specific bespoke type of microphone. And it wasn't just to add to that, just the animals we were recording. It was also the sounds of our planet. So 90% of the stories are probably animal stories, but there's a healthy slab of really interesting, unusual, quirky stories about the sounds of our planet, from drinking trees to the sounds of thawing ice lakes in Canada, through to the singing dunes of Namibia, which are this sand dune system which hums and buzzes constantly as they warm and cool. So we were trying to capture the sounds of the planet as well. And yeah, each different story required a slightly different microphone array. For example, we one of the big signature stories we wanted to capture was the love songs of snow leopards. Snow leopards are some of the most elusive animals on the planet and some of the hardest to film. And they've been filmed a few times for nature documentaries, but nobody's ever managed to capture a close-up, good quality call of their love songs. And so we developed and devised our own specific microphones for that story. So we developed camera traps, or remote cameras, which we fitted with high-quality microphones, and we rigged into the hills of the Himalayan, Indian Himalayas, and we left them for 2 years, obviously checking them regularly and changing batteries regularly. And by using those remote cameras and microphones, we were able to capture this sound closer and in better quality than ever before. So it was an amazing win for the series. We also... Yeah, Sam was mentioning dolphins, you know, devising buoy systems. Also things like drinking trees. So we mic'd up cottonwood trees in Montana. And during spring, during the meltwater, they drink up to 200 gallons a day. And we wanted to capture those crazy sounds. So we injected tiny microphones under the bark, and we captured the sounds of drinking trees, which sound kind of like slurping a McDonald's milkshake, which I thought was quite fun. So yeah, every animal needs its own microphone, and yeah, the microphones took a beating, to be honest with you. So yeah, you know, microphones in some of those natural places don't last very long. Down in Antarctica, I know that the brutal conditions, a lot of mic cables froze completely solid, so they were like an iron bar at kind of minus 40 degrees Fahrenheit. And so yeah, we had to devise different mics for different animals.
Sam, what was the easiest Earth sound to get wherever you got it across the world, and what was the hardest?
So the easiest, I think we had a shoot out in Antarctica where we were trying to record the calls of the emperor penguins. And emperor penguins make a very, very famous call, which you probably heard on nature documentaries before. It's called the Two Voices call, and it's how mums would leave their chicks for sort of 3 or 4 days in this huge sort of creches of hundreds of different chicks, and when they return, the only way they can find their chick is through sound. So they let out this two voices call. And the chick will recognize that and call in response. And so, but the challenge was recording a clean. We just wanted to get one clean two voices call. And there's very strict rules. We're working with researchers down there, very strict rules about how close you can get to the penguins. And so actually recording a single voice in the colony of 10,000 penguins was going to be a challenge. But the thing we found with Antarctica is the animals, because they're just not used to seeing humans. Everyone is a curiosity. And so wherever we went, the sound recorders would be there, and the penguin would just waddle up, and then, sort of five meters away from the microphone would just deliver the perfect two voices call cleanly and without the background cacophony, because he'd walked away from the rest of the colony. So that was probably the easiest. In terms of the most difficult, I think one of the most difficult, which actually turned out we came back with something slightly different, which was more amazing than we ever imagined. But we were working up in the Arctic, so this time out of sort of Arctic Norway, and we'd gone up there to record the courtship call of the bearded seal, which makes a crazy alien whistling sound. And we did get that call, but they were the bearded seals were tricky to film and record. But as we're working with a Norwegian sound recordist up there who had all her hydrophones in the water and was getting ready to record, and it wasn't a bearded seal that came nearby; it was a group of young walrus, and we recorded a display which has very rarely been seen or heard before, and the scientists believe it's young male walrus sort of practicing their chat-up lines, so practicing their courtship calls. And they make some of the craziest sounds of any animal on the planet. You can't quite believe it's being made by an animal. And they make a knocking sound, which sounds like somebody knocking a nail into a piece of wood with a hammer. And then the craziest sound of all is known as the gong, and it sounds like somebody striking a gong, dong, and it sort of reverberates. And so we came away with these most extraordinary sounds that we all got back into the dubbing suite back in Bristol and listened to, and were absolutely blown away by. But it wasn't the sound we'd gone out to record at all. But it was it's got to be heard to be believed.
If you think it's one thing to really, and a big thing, to capture animal sounds, the kind of ways you hear in this Apple TV Plus series, where do we tell you about how they captured actual earth sounds from deserts that hum, trees that drink, and a buzz with the northern lights? That's where we get to next. We're speaking with Alice Williamson and Sam Hodgson, the executive producer and series producer, respectively, of the new Apple TV Plus docuseries, Earth Sounds. Apple TV Plus, of course, available on smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles. Alice and Sam join us this half hour from Bristol, England, here exclusively on Tomorrow Be Televised. Happy you're with us as well, wherever you're catching us, across the country, around the globe, on Blog Talk Radio, Speakerton Radio, as well as on podcasts as well. 46 now with the folks at True Fans now aboard. Simon Avon with you live from New York, 55 degrees, top of the hour. Let's hear you, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. And I'll be with you in persona on Wednesday morning on Sports Newswire, the daily sports news information show on Sports Grid Network. We'll talk TV sports, and we'll certainly have a lot to say about the world of the tube. So join me, along with Craig and the crew, that's live from New York, Sports Newswire, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, on Sports Grid Network, available on smart TV sets, devices, local now, Amazon Freebie, and other multi-channel bundles. Now, before you did this series, you did another one for Apple TV Plus, Alice, called Earth at night in color. Very extraordinary series for anyone who saw it. How did you use the production process there to capture what I said before the last moment about the fact that you have deserts that hum, trees that drink, and northern lights that buzz?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I think one of the things that we always try and challenge ourselves with is there's so much natural history out there. We're always thinking, how do we see things differently? How do we get that fresh angle? So as a company, Offspring Films, that's always our key thing is how do we see things or hear things differently in the case of Earth Sounds? And so working with Apple TV Plus, it feels like a really perfect fit for one another, because obviously as a very ambitious and exciting platform, they also love their tech and they love their storytelling. So both series, the night series was about using night cameras, and we developed a lot of lens and camera technology in-house. And I think that's what got the team at Apple TV Plus so excited, was it's not just best in class, it's never before done. So we brought these stories of animals at night in color to the audience for the first time. So it felt like a natural evolution on this series to look at, hey, you know, what are the other areas in the natural world that we could turn our focus to and capture in not just the best way, but in brand new ways that have never been seen or heard before. So sound felt like a really great way to do it. And for me, I've always felt like it's the sound recorders are the unsung heroes of television. And there's a lot of attention on best cinematography, rightfully, but also we really wanted to major on the sound capture. And when we originally pitched the series, the commissioning team there, I remember them saying, well, this sounds more like a radio show. So we had to make a pledge to them that we're going to make it look as good as it was going to sound, which hopefully we've managed to achieve. It was just about trying to apply and use the latest microphones in ways that kind of think differently. So, for example, in the the beaches of Patagonia, we use seismic sound microphones for detecting earthquakes to record the sounds of elephant seals. And they kind of body pop, they slam their bodies into the sound and create these shock waves. So we use earthquake detection microphones to capture their sounds. We used long-wave radio. We worked with scientists who used long-wave radio antenna to capture the sounds of the northern lights. And one of my favorites was the sounds of ice lakes, which for me, it was trying to get those weird and wonderful sounds. We recorded ice lakes thawing in the spring. And as the ice thaws and cracks, sound travels at different speed through ice, and higher pitches travel faster than lower pitches. So the high pitches hit your ears or hit your microphones momentarily faster. So it makes it, pew, it's kind of this laser gun sort of sound, pew, pew, as they crack. So we were able to record these really weird sounds that I think the audience will love when they hear the series. And also, as we were mixing it, we were in for a lot of surprises. We mixed one sequence with koalas, and as we were in the final mix, I remember putting the kind of sounds in and doing the final kind of pass, and we got to this bellowing koala, and it set off all the car alarms in the street outside the audio suite, because these sounds are so resonant and so low. And actually listening back on some of my devices, especially at home, I've realized that some of the sounds are too low for my speakers to clock. So it's really trying to operate on the very fringes and the very limits of the tech and the very limits of what's possible to give that audience this brand new experience of the natural world and to hear our planet like never before and to give them this immersive journey through sound and into these weird and wonderful soundscapes that I think kind of chimes with both Offspring's ambition to create new and interesting bits of television and, of course, Apple TV Plus's ambition to always push the boundaries.
Mm-hmm. Sam, what kind of a quest do you and your production team have to go on, first of all, to find a desert that hums or a tree that drinks? And then make sure you have your audio people and your camera people there to capture it when it happens. Because as we all know, you don't direct Mother Nature. Mother Nature directs you.
Yeah, absolutely, yes. And that's something we're always aware of as sort of natural history sort of filmmakers. Yes, nature never gives you what you expect, but can give you even more incredible things a lot of the time. Our sort of motto on this series was sort of audio first. So normally, as Alex mentioned, when we're going out to film an animal or a sequence, we'll sort of concentrate on, you know, how close can we get the cameras and the sort of practicalities of how we film it. With this one, it was very much sort of audio first. So let's get the audio first. Let's check that the sounds are as amazing as we think, and then we will return and we'll get the imagery and the audio again. But it's very much sort of audio first, and so checking. And there were some stories. There was a story we had hoped to film, which is about sort of humming, how giraffes sort of hum when they sleep, and it's been recorded once in captivity. And so we set out to try and record this in the wild. In fact, we tried on a couple of occasions, and we just couldn't record it in the wild. The giraffes weren't humming, so that was a story that went no further. And you know, we'll keep going in our sort of ambition to record humming giraffes. But but sort of audio first allowed us to sort of make sure that the sounds were extraordinary enough, and then we could go and tell the story of the behaviour and figure out how we got the visuals. But one of the sort of fun sort of visual techniques we used was we worked with a sort of hyperlapse slow motion cinematographer, and what we wanted to do was create acoustic journeys through landscapes. And so we worked with Rob Whitworth to create sort of seamless journeys through the Amazon rainforest. So it allowed us to sort of travel through time, and it was an acoustic journey. So what we wanted to do was hear the different sounds of the Amazon rainforest over 24 hours. And so working with Rob Whitworth allowed us to create this sort of seamless journey from above the canopy, traveling through the canopy, down onto the forest floor. And as you're journeying through this soundscape, you discover that at different times of day, different animals are calling in the rainforest. So in the mornings, it's the birds and the primates that call. And then in the middle of the day, when it's too hot, it's just the insect chatter that goes on. And then as we come out into evening and night, the frogs take over. So we played with some really interesting visual techniques, as well as all the different microphones and recording tech. But our motto was always sort of audio first. So let's get the audio first, and then let's go and tell those amazing sound stories.
Mm. Alex, we're almost out of time, but before you go, what's next for you and your company, Offspring Films? Are we going to see a second season of Earth Sounds or something new in the nature world?
Well, let's wait and see. As I say, we're always looking for new and wonderful ways to bring the natural world to the audience. And we're working up a few new ideas, and we've got a few kind of concepts which we're playing with. And I think we talked about 3 years ago on Earth at Night in Colour. So fingers crossed, in a few years' time, we'd be able to have a follow-up chat about our next exciting adventure into the natural world, which will hopefully open the audience's eyes and ears to what an amazing and wonderful place that we live in. Maybe even with Tom narrating again, which would be fantastic.
Right now, you can open up your eyes and ears to Earth Sounds. It's playing on Apple TV Plus, available on smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles. More details about the program online, go to tv.apple.com. That's tv.apple.com. That's Earth Sounds, running now on Apple TV Plus. Alex Williamson, Sam Hodgson, thank you both very much for making your Monday prime time with us, and all the very best with your series and more new great things coming from your company, Offspring Films. It's been a delight to have you with us and kick off today's episode.
Fantastic.
Thanks for having us.
You're very welcome, Alex Williamson, and Sam, take care. Enjoy the week.
Fantastic. You too.
Alex Williamson, Sam Hodgson, joining us live from Bristol, England, this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. We'll have more on our program, but first, these words from the fine folks at BlendJet. Now, if your blender is bulky and it's a real pain to operate, I got an idea for you. Give BlendJet the opportunity to make stress smoothies and shakes or mixed drinks an easy pleasure. You know, BlendJet is so portable to work up a smoothie at your favorite office or a protein booster at the gym or a poolside margarita. It's quiet to operate and rechargeable on the go. So, what are you waiting for? All you got to do is go to BlendJet.com, grab yours today, and be sure to use the promo code TELEVISE. That's right, the promo code TELEVISE at 12%. And when you do, you get 12% off your order, and you get free two-day shipping. So, remember, use the promo code TELEVISE, T-L-E-V-I-S-E-D. You get 12% off your BlendJet order at BlendJet.com, and you get free two-day shipping. So blend anytime, anywhere with BlendJet. Coming up in our next half hour, we'll have our new classic trivia question. Seven prizes still in play for the first correct answer. We're out to get our first Tomorrow Be Televised classic trivia winner of 2024. But first, we expect to have with us Larry Adams, the chief executive of Black Fam, the brand new channel that launched a week ago with Whoopi Goldberg as an equity partner and a consultant. All coming your way after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're hearing the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com, together reaching over 100 million listeners around the world every month and growing. One of BTR's most popular shows comes your way later today, the Key of the Unplugged show. Check it out at special time, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. That's the Key of the Unplugged show, special time, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, Best BTR 24/7 on YouTube. Welcome back to more of our first hour of this two-hour edition of Tomorrow Be Televised to open up your first full March week. Simon Applebaum with you live from New Haven, New York. We are awaiting Larry Adams, the Chief Executive Officer of Black Fam. It's the Black-owned and focused family plumbing service that launched a week ago with Whoopi Goldberg as an equity partner and consultant. And if you'd like to get involved in the conversation, give us a call. 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. So as soon as Larry gives us the call, we will be happy to put him on. Larry, if you're hearing us, give us that call, 646-652-2906. And as soon as I see that you're ready to go, we will get you on the air. In the meantime, let's go forward and do our classic trivia question of the week. Brand new question, and we still have seven great prizes in play. We're still looking for our first correct answer and winner of 2024, first one in over 3 months. And we have seven prizes, I said, in play, like the 2024 American Express Pocket Calendar. We've got the AMC Network's free Uber card, the free Redbox Movie Night card from Crackle Connects, two wonderful CDs, Lifetime Women in Rock, with great hits and performances by Linda Ronstadt, Laura Branigan, Bananarama, The Pretenders, Pat Benatar, Joan Jett, and many, many more, and Chicago's greatest hits with super songs like Saturday in the Park, If You Leave Me Now, and 25 or 6 to 4. And we have two wonderful books for you from Emmy Award-winning writer-showrunner Jeff Melvoin of Northern Exposure fame. We have his wonderful book that he talked about on this program last fall. That's Running the Show, Television from the Inside. And from University of Southern California professor David Craig, who was also with us last fall, his new book, Apocalypse Television, How the Day After, that's a made-for-TV movie that marked its 40th anniversary on ABC last November, How the Day After Helped End the Cold War. All of those goodies can be yours if you know the answer to this question. Remember the TV series Mr. Ed? Yes, about the talking horse. You know, horse to horse, of course, according to the famous theme song. And that is, of course, unless the horse is the famous Mr. Ed. Well, here's our question. Who is the voice of Mr. Ed on Mr. Ed? Who is the voice of Mr. Ed on Mr. Ed? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember to enclose your name and where you're emailing from so that if you win, prize out to you ASAP. One more time, here is the question. Who is the voice of Mr. Ed on Mr. Ed? That series, by the way, started in syndication back in 1961. Then it went on CBS Sunday Afternoons, where it had a four- or five-season run with such shows as, well, it was on opposite shows or near such shows as The 20th Century, Lassie, GE College Bowl, many, many more shows in that great Sunday from 5 to 8 time period back in the wonderful days of the 60s. Who was the voice on Mr. Ed? Who voiced Mr. Ed? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. And if we don't get a winner by the end of today, we'll post the question tomorrow, Tuesday morning, on Facebook and X or Twitter. Facebook is Simon Applebaum, X or Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's Facebook at Simon Applebaum, X or Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to play in, so do so, and all the very best. You just missed the question. We'll have the question for you one more time in our second hour. All right. We are still waiting Larry Adams from Black Fam to join us. Larry, if you hear us, give us a call, 646-652-2906. And as soon as I see you're ready to go, we'll have you on. So what we'll do is we're going to go forward with a guest that we were going to have on starting at the top of the hour. Last week, very interesting event happened here in New York for the second year in a row called the Growth Fronts. And one of the new players at the Growth Fronts was an organization called Equal Pride. It was an organization that put together a new service called the Advocate Channel. Well, there was an organization that worked with Equal Pride to make the Advocate Channel happen. It's called Infinity Partnerships. And joining us live from Hudson, New York, to talk about that organization and what it did for that service is its chief executive, George Manny. George, welcome in. Great to have you.
Hey, thanks, Simon. George, good to be here. How are you?
Very, very fine, thank you. And George, thanks for the earlier time while we're still waiting for Larry to come on board. George, first of all, explain what Infinity Partnerships is. What does it do?
Yeah, absolutely, Simon. So Infinity Partnerships was created with the goal of helping diverse content creators, multicultural content companies, better reach audiences at scale. We work with both advertisers and publishers. With Equal Pride in particular, what we're doing with them is we are working with them on the Advocate Channel, which is a new fast channel that we are bringing to market. What we're doing with that is essentially talking to distribution partners. We are currently live on Amazon. So that's Amazon Fire News by Amazon. And what Infinity was hired to do by Mark Berryhill and the Equal Pride team was to essentially get this important content out there. So when you look at multicultural voices, what our research has indicated is that multicultural voices are not adequately represented authentically within mainstream media. So what we did with Mark and team was we saw a gap in the market, and then we started a concept, okay, how can we do this? What can we do? So we created the idea of a new series that we call The Advocates, which is the main headline show on the Advocate Channel. Think of it as a multicultural culture segment, 30 minutes a day, 52 weeks out of the year, evergreen. The goal is for it to be non-political, and Amanda and I, my business partner at Infinity, we're thrilled to be bringing this voice to the television community and the connected television community generally.
Mm-hmm. Is the Advocate Channel the first network that your organization has worked with?
The Advocate Channel is not the first network. We do work with other diverse publishers, including Ebony in the BIPOC space, and we do work with Mundo Now in the Hispanic space. But what I will say, Simon, is that the Advocate Channel is the first LGBTQ-focused asset that we have been shopping around to the various networks.
Mm-hmm. And we'll go back to the other services you just mentioned, Ebony and Mundo Now, in a bit. Now, how long has the Advocate Channel been running? I know it is sort of the channel outreach of the famous print publication and website, The Advocate.
Yeah.
How long have they thought about doing a video service that would be available on smart TV sets and devices?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, Infinity Partnerships has had a longstanding relationship with Equal Pride, formerly of different names. They do, as you mentioned, Simon, own the iconic Advocate, including print. So Advocate and Elk, they do have print editions of that too. What I will say is that this concept has been thought about for some time, including within previous ownerships of the company. For this particular iteration, we have been going at this for about 1 year, I would say, with the current management. And what has been interesting is as that 1 year has continued, we've seen the need for this type of authentic reporting just really amplified in the space. 2024 is an important year, and we're excited to be bringing this voice to the market. What our research has shown is that both multicultural folks, I will include LGBTQ within that multicultural umbrella, and women, historically, we have research from Smith-Geiger that has shown this, have historically and consistently felt that their voices and needs are not adequately represented with the media. So I'd say it's been a long time coming, but now that we're rolling, we're rolling fast, and we're having all the convos with the appropriate folks on the you know, the television manufacturer side of the coin, MVDPs, AVDPs, and yeah, we're just looking forward to continuing to have those convos and get this channel out there at scale.
For those of you just joining us, we are still awaiting Larry Adams. He is the founder and chief executive officer of BlackFam with BLKFAM. It's the new African-American black-owned family programming service that started a week ago. Whoopi Goldberg is a key equity partner. She's also a creative consultant. So we're still waiting for Larry to come on. Larry, if you're hearing us or your PR people are hearing us, give us a call, 646-652-2906. And as soon as I see your radio on the air, we will get you on. In the meantime, we'll continue with George Manning, co-founder and chief executive officer of Affinity Partnerships, an organization that works with various television services, including the Advocate Channel, which is another one of the recent services that you can find on smart TV sets, device, and multi-channel bundles. Let's talk about the programming that the Advocate Channel happens. What are some of these shows? And then we'll get into the specific show you're working with that has multicultural content.
Yeah, so if you look at Equal Pride in general, we are the owners of different tentpole events. So we have the Out 100. There is an Out 100 special. We do have historical video on demand content as well on the channel, everything from cover to cover. But I do want to specifically talk about the Advocates, which is our new show, where we are able to tap into various pools of celebrities as well. Everybody from Jamie Lee Curtis to Tom Daly, just to share different perspectives. You know, again, what we have felt and what we've seen is that folks specifically within the multicultural segment need more authentic connection and representation when turning on the TV. There's a lot of confusion, I think, in FAST in general. When you turn on the FAST channel, finding content that speaks to you. So again, Simon, I think this channel, and we're so happy to be doing this in partnership with Equal Pride and that team, is really fitting a necessary gap that exists in the market.
Mm-hmm. What kind of subjects are covered on that program?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm glad that you asked that question. So what we do is we have different takes on everyday topics, advocating for jobs, advocating for education. The goal is to be able to look to these topics through a very authentic eye. Our research has separately indicated that folks are not that interested in content that may appear too glossy. I think we have had a problem in LGBTQ multicultural where there has been some resentment against brands getting involved in these causes during Pride Month, where brands sometimes inauthentically may be perceived as wanting to get behind these types of causes. So our goal is to bring really authentic reporting and the voice of the user and the viewer to them in a very consistent manner. And the goal is for this to be evergreen content. The goal is for this not to be political. The goal for this is to celebrate diversity in our communities and for folks to be able to see themselves in the programming that the Advocates brings them every day.
Because you just brought it up, I want to bring up two thoughts that were brought up during the growth fronts, particularly this past Thursday here in New York. There was a panel involving various organizations that are doing all sorts of media for the gay and lesbian community. And yep. One of the points that was brought up is, and I believe was brought up by the representative from Equal Pride that was on the panel, is yep. The first one is that a lot of people think that if you go to a multicultural television service, whether it's a service aimed at African Americans or Latinos mm-hmm. Or Asian American, et cetera, that you don't need to go to a gay and lesbian programming service, whether it's the Advocate Channel or Reverie or others that we have covered on this program. And what this community is saying is you can do both. Why can't you do both? Why can't you be on our service as well as beyond a multicultural or a service aimed at communities of color, because there are people in our community who are people of color. There are organizations in our community who are organizations of color. And that's the argument that's sort of the yin-yang with the advertiser community.
Yes, and I have an opinion about that, and I think that when you look at labels and you look at the way that marketers look at populations, oftentimes it's easier to think of individuals in certain buckets, LGBTQ being one, Hispanic being one, BIPOC being one. One of the reasons that Amanda and I started Infinity Partnerships was we both worked in various roles in advertising and sales for years. She out of San Francisco, various tech companies out of Silicon Valley, me in New York, myself being a first generation Indian American LGBTQ. We ourselves were always in this intersection, and there is this intersectionality that exists. I think sometimes it's difficult for brands to kind of concept that and to kind of understand that in how the brands are attempting to communicate with their community. But one of our goals at the Advocate Channel is to kind of broaden that and to have the mission of the channel not be only LGBTQ. Of course, the history of the company, as you know, with the Advocate, the print magazine of the Advocate has been within that dimension. But things have changed, and now you have multicultural that actually exists across this really wide spectrum, which is why in addition to the shows that I mentioned, we do have things like Advocating Earth. We have Health Matters. We have Real Life Advocates. The goal is to essentially be able to highlight diversity in a very broad sense.
The other growth front subject that was brought up specifically on that panel was that even though there are more television options, more media options serving gay, lesbian, transgender, et cetera, LGBTQ community, whether it's Advocate Channel, Reverie, et cetera, that the needle in terms of advertising support has not moved that much. It's moved. It hasn't moved that much. And part of the issue is how do you portray the gay, and lesbian, transgender community in ads? How do you make it realistic without being controversial? The whole issue of Bud Light and Dylan Mulvaney that took place last year. was one of the topics that was brought up. And in fact, it was the person from Equal Pride who said maybe if Anheuser-Busch had come to us first rather than just go forward and do the Dylan Mulvaney campaign, they would not have had the issue that they ended up having.
Yep. Yeah, that's a really fair point. I think you can look at that Bud Light controversy and actually have that be a business school case study as to potentially what not to do. That is the reality, what we see both in the context of what we're doing with Equal Pride, the great work we're doing with them, that what we see separately, generally supporting the multicultural community through Infinity Partnerships, we'll see massive amounts of interest, whether it be during Black History Month, Hispanic Heritage Month, Gay Pride Month. I think speaking of the LGBTQ consumer directly, Simon, research has shown that when you authentically connect with this consumer, it is a big purchasing segment. Our latest research shows $1.7 trillion within the U.S., $3.9 trillion, I believe, globally. So I think what brands need to realize is that there is a benefit to supporting these communities. It's just good business. It's not only good for brand reputation, it's good business. It's good for new customer acquisition. It's good for retention, loyalty. You do have that level of disingenuity when a brand suddenly kind of sweeps in and owns Gay Pride Month. But there are challenges because in talking to agencies and buyers, although you would think it is good business for these communities to be supported and elevated year-round, we oftentimes don't see the media plans coming into formulation until we get to around this time of the year, actually, March, April, where June is in sight. And that's unfortunately what we see. Despite all of the movement and how much traction we've made within diversity and equity and inclusion in general, I think we're still very, very segmented in when these populations come into focus. And I don't think that's necessarily with the times. I think that's more reflective of these populations not actually being the dominant percentages that they are now. Because if you look at LGBTQ, I think it's 1 out of 5, depending on what generation you're looking at, identifies within that segment. Hispanic, you're probably looking closer at 40%. So I do think that strategies need to evolve to be recognizing of the fact that the overall demographics of the country are rapidly changing and changing faster even now.
We are speaking with George Monti. He is the co-founder and chief executive officer of Infinity Partnerships, working with the Advocate Channel. It is a service that you can now find on smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles. He joins us live from Hudson, New York this half hour, and we're going to keep him to the next hour as well here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon, I'm with you live from New York. We are still trying to get Larry Adams, the founder and chief executive officer of BlackFam, BLKFAM. That's the service that Whoopi Goldberg is involved with as an equity partner and creative consultant. They started a week ago today. And Larry, if you or your PR people are hearing the sound of my voice, get on the phone, 646-652-2906, and we will get you on the air ASAP. And we want to hear from you, our folks listening in, wherever you are, BB, on this live and wonderful Monday afternoon. 54 degrees, we get near the top of the next hour. So give us a call, 646-652-2906, 646-652-2906. Number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio. Or get into our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And in our next hour, we will have George continue on. Hopefully, we will have Larry at some point. And at the bottom of the hour, we'll be joined by Sean Laughlin, the executive producer of Deal No Deal Island, that starts its second episode as regular time period tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time on your local NBC station. Larry, George, a moment ago you were talking about a number of times bringing up Pride Month. And something else that came out as a topic throughout the growth fronts was the idea of advertisers specifically targeting specific months for communities of color, and the case of Pride Month, June, for the gay, lesbian, and transgender, et cetera, community. What do you hear about that? Is it that deal that people, if they want to advertise on a service like Advocate Channel or Reverie or something else, that it has to be just Pride Month and no other month? Is that the same thing, let's say, for African-American networks, Black History Month, and very little everywhere else in the year? What gives here?
Yes, Simon, my opinion is that what we were talking about previously, the fact that individuals are not just one thing. You can be gay and Hispanic, you can be black and gay, is, unfortunately what we do see is that the way that brands want to, or the way that brands evidence support for various communities, it's very easy if you're able to do it during certain times of the year. I think part of that is a function of how things have been done in the past. They're not necessarily a function of what a brand should be doing for the best impact for the brand. I had hoped that things would have dramatically changed getting into 2024, but unfortunately, I do believe that a lot of these high-profile controversies that we have seen and have experienced have caused brands to be more cautious. I think what a brand is able to do is check off the box sometimes. If you come in and offer support, let's look at Gay Pride Month. If a brand comes in to offer support during Gay Pride Month, that can be viewed by 100% of people as perhaps not controversial. Whereas if a brand more in an evergreen way might provide support to a community like the LGBTQ community throughout the year, I think the fear is that that might actually, while empower part of your consumer, may also anger another part of your consumer. My partner and I activate at the Cannes Lions Film Festival every year. So for folks that don't know, that's in June of each year. June 2023, when we were there, this is very apparent because we were coming off of these high-profile controversies, both Target and Bud Light. And this is an advertiser, Simon-focused conference where you're supposed to have advertising agencies and advertisers from around the world coming together and talking about more how to elevate strategies, how to take these strategies and advertising initiatives in general, including television, to the next level. But it was interesting how none of these controversies were even really talked about at scale. And I do think part of it is because you do have that fear of when supporting communities more authentically, you might have the risk or the perceived risk of alienating another part of your community. So I think folks are trying to, you know, have their cake and eat it, too, if you were to ask my opinion.
Mm-hmm. What does the Advocate Channel want to be? I mean, the people there, Equal Pride, et cetera, do they think about how they want this channel to grow and go? Do they want to do scripted television? They want to do documentaries? They want to do interview shows? What is sort of the game plan going forward for the Advocate Channel?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the Advocate Channel has some unique attributes to it. We are part of a very large global media organization. We have media assets, too. That's one thing that I do want to emphasize, Simon. We have tens and tens of millions of folks who visit our pages, whether it be advocate.com, out.com. We have a very loyal social media following. Ultimately, what the Advocate Channel wants to be is a voice for the multicultural community, LGBTQ being part of that community. And what that could manifest in is many, many different things. But I do want to emphasize the point that this is very new at this moment. There has not been a channel. You had mentioned some of our competitors, Simon. The difference with us is that we do have this legacy of media, and we have eyeballs, and we have marketing that we can put behind our owned media assets to actually get eyeballs on the channel. So our core goal right now is building up the brand for the Advocate Channel, having our users understand that this channel does exist, and creating, no pun on words, but creating advocacy and awareness of the Advocate Channel within our core community. And as that grows, and as that allows us to obtain carriage on the various television endpoints, whether it be a Google, we are about, you'll see publicly a press release that we're putting out related to Amazon. We are live on Amazon Fire Stick, so you guys can find us there. Again, it's new, but I would say the sky's the limit, because in our opinion, what we're trying to do and what we're looking to bring to market with the support of our powerful portfolio of media assets has not been done before.
We're going to pause our interview with George. George, stay with us. He'll be with us for the next half hour, which is what your actual schedule was. But I want to, again, address the situation with the person who we had hoped would be on this half hour. That's Larry Adams, the founder and chief executive officer of Black Fam, which premiered a week ago today with Whoopi Goldberg as a major equity player as well as a creative consultant. Larry was scheduled to be on this particular half hour. For some reason, he's not able to be with us. Something may have popped up. I know that our phone situation is working. We tested out with our other guests. So anyway, Larry, if you still like to be on the program today, if you hear us, your PR people can hear us, give us a call, and we'll have you on during our next half hour at 646-652-2906. And for those of you, by the way, who haven't seen Black Fam, you should know it's running now on Amazon Prime Video channels, Apple TV, Roku, Samsung, Vizio, and LG Smart TV sets. And for more details about the service online, go to www.blackfam.tv. That's www.blackfam.tv. And if we can't get Larry on the show today, we will find out what happened, and we'll reschedule him for our episode this Friday or possible episode Thursday, and if not, sometime on one of our three episodes next week. You are hearing Tomorrow Be Televised. We are the Promo About TV's current and future. We are available to you Mondays and Fridays and sometimes other days during the week on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and TuneIn Radio by Simulcast. And we're also available every time, 24/7, on our special homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. You can also check us out at our website, 24/7, from the great people on Podium, tomorrowbetelevised.com. That's tomorrowbetelevised.com. And we're available now on 46, that's right, 46 podcast platforms, including our newest one, TrueFans. That's TrueFans. We welcome those of you that are tuning us in on that new podcast player. We appreciate you coming aboard. We hope you make us a regular habit. And for those of you checking us out on podcasts, we invite you to check us out live, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, Tune Radio. That way, you get involved by calling our guests, interacting with them by phone or in our chat room. Remember, in order to make the phone call, it's 646-652-2906. And the chat room is SimonApple04. By name, you'll find it at our homepage on the web, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And remember, you can always check me out Wednesdays on Sports News Wire in person. That is the Daily News Information Hour with Craig and the crew on Sports Grid Network, available on smart TV sets, smart devices, Amazon, Freebie, Local Now, and other multi-channel bundles. We'll be with you on Wednesday in that 11 o'clock hour, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific. And if you want to know more about the AIMM growth front that took place last week in New York, check out my new column that just came out this afternoon at MediaVillage.org. That's MediaVillage.org. And we'd like to hear what you have to say about that. So email me, SimonApple04 at yahoo.com. You can also respond by social media. I'm on Facebook and LinkedIn at Simon Applebaum, and next to Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. When we come back, more with George Mani at Infinity Partnerships about the Advocate Channel and the other services on television he's dealing with and his company. And then at the bottom of the hour, Sean Loughran, the executive producer of Deal No Deal Island, which now goes into its regular time period tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time on your local NBC station. All that coming your way after we pause, top of the hour, for web identification. This is www.blogsofray.com, speaker.com, and tune.com. Together, reach over 100 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget, BTR is your home for the Independent Music Showcase, now on Wednesdays at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. That's the Independent Music Showcase, the best in indie music every week, Wednesdays, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, Best BTR always on YouTube. Welcome to the second hour of Tomorrow Be Televised on this Monday afternoon of the first full week of March 2024. And welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour. Simon, I'm with you live from New York. 53 degrees and cloudy at the top of the hour. Happy to have you aboard. Again, we want to welcome those of you tuning us in on our brand new podcast site, True Fans, our 46th such site around. And we want to have you with us. We have coming your way very shortly, George Mani, the co-founder, chief executive of Infinity Partnerships, the folks behind the Advocate Channel, you can find on smart TV sets and multi-channel bundles near you. And then at the bottom of the hour, Sean Loughran, the senior vice president of Animal Shine North America and the executive producer of one of the shows it produces now, Deal No Deal Island, Monday nights, including tonight on your local NBC station. If a question or comment for both guests, ring them in at this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe. You're on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or TuneIn Radio. Or you can get into our chat room and communicate that way. SimonApple04 is the name of the room. You'll find it at the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. This hour of our program is brought to you by Wild, reusable, refillable, natural joints that's kind to your body and the planet. George Mani, thank you again for being with us, and thanks for the extra time, by the way, the last half hour. George, how is the Advocate Channel doing? What kind of feedback is the folks there getting?
Yeah, you know, we've gotten great feedback. That deal was a little bit different, very different than the Advocate Channel deal in terms of it was more of a licensed kind of deal with Lionsgate. I think what I will say is that the fact that you have these different multicultural projects happening simultaneously, you'd mentioned some of our other competitors in the LGBTQ space, points to the fact that there is a want for diverse content. I think folks are getting a little bit challenged trying to find content on the various FAST channels out there. And we are seeing an increasing amount of interest in multicultural TV content. I will say, Simon, though, part of the challenge, I think, for multicultural media companies in general is sometimes the investment required to get involved in the space. Because if you look at things like video production, how much of the library do I need versus how much do I license, how much is that going to cost, it can be a little bit daunting at times. And some of what we do at Infinity with our various multicultural clients is if someone is not ready right now for maybe a full channel or to bring a full catalog to somebody like LG or a different device manufacturer, how can you get started with maybe some smaller projects, social amplification or video amplification on social, creating video that potentially is more appropriate for bite-sized content as opposed to full episodic content. So I will say across all of our multicultural clients, we're seeing a lot of interest from folks in caring and in being able to offer this content to their viewers. I will say that the discovery of this content and just the amount of content available on all these FAST platforms is causing a little bit of confusion. And I think that's more from the consumer standpoint, how do you best get a consumer educated as to this type of content existing? I'd be curious if you had an opinion on that too.
Well, since you raised the question, how do you answer it? How do services like the Advocate Channel promote and publicize themselves in such a way they can break through to the 90% of U.S. households who now have smart TV sets and smart devices and multi-channel bundles, which they can watch an incredible variety of channels and services?
Yeah. In the case of the Advocate Channel and in the case of Most publishers that have a physical web presence, what we do is we actually do use our media assets. So the impression traffic, the eyeballs that we have on our website to actually promote to the channel to get folks aware that the channel does exist. In the distribution convos that we have with folks that we are attempting to, we want to take the channel, the additional leverage that we have at the Advocate channel is we have the ability to give somebody the right, firstly, we have our own media that we can barter and we can give away media to somebody like a YouTube that may want more awareness for their diverse creators. We can support that with media that we make available on theadvocate.com or out.com. Separately, in the case of the Advocate channel, we do have major tentpole events that we have and we own, like the Out 100. Think of that as kind of the Oscars for LGBTQ. Happens typically out of LA every year. That's an additional opportunity for folks to be made aware that the channel does exist because we do get good viewership of those types of events. So I would say, to answer your question, it's about taking advantage of assets that a company does have. Advocate Channel and Equal Pride, we do have lots of eyeballs on our own media assets and using that to make folks aware that we do have this channel. You should check out the channel. You already love the brand. Why not extend your love by tuning into the channel as well, which, by the way, you can find in XYZ, Amazon, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned in the last half hour that Advocate Channel and is not the only TV service you're working with. One of them you're working with is Ebony. Now, Ebony, of course, everybody knows, is the famous African-American Read magazine. And 2 years ago, they were featured in Byron Allen's Black-owned Media Upfront. And it looked like they were going to launch a network with an organization called Ebony Studios that they had put together. Now, there is an Ebony TV service that launched a few months ago that Lionsgate is putting together. And basically, it's Lionsgate film and TV content directed at the African-American Black audience. What do you know about what Ebony is doing? Does Ebony want to launch its own, separate from what Lionsgate is doing, network?
Yeah, unfortunately, our engagement with Ebony is a little bit different. We're less focused on what they do on the TV side of things. That was more handled internally. We help, actually, Ebony with various different projects. We have a digital project that we're helping them with Ebony.com. I don't have too much information on the Lionsgate deal, but the channel is out there. I've had, good feedback from the channel from folks that I've asked in the industry. I think it is definitely serving a gap that didn't before exist, and it's surfacing up a lot of relevant content for folks in one place where maybe that content couldn't have easily been found otherwise.
Do you think at some point Lionsgate will open the channel up to content creators and say, look, we don't just want library content on this service. We want originals, whether it's scripted or unscripted.
I think so. I think that's the trend that we're seeing, and the challenge is how does one do that in this day and age, given the cost of production, given the how much everything costs. I do think though that is the trend. One thing that I think will support that trend is the research that we've done in general has shown that sometimes folks are not only interested in hyper-produced content that is, looks very expensive, is very expensive. I think there's a awareness and a want within the community, any community, for content that might be maybe more creator, as you mentioned, creator-type content that could be shorter form, that perhaps allows the individual to connect. I think the consumption habits that we're seeing within individuals, given the rise of TikTok and Instagram and the short videos and all these platforms, have also gotten interest in shorter form content, at least in this day and age, perhaps more of interest than it has been in the past.
Mm-hmm. The other organization mentions Mundo Now. What are they and how are you involved with them?
Yeah. So for those that don't know, Mundo Now is formerly Mundo Hispanico, formerly a print publication newspaper, one of the largest Hispanic media companies in the United States. The difference with Mundo Now is that I'm not sure how much folks know about Telemundo or Televisa. Those services tend to be are Spanish only. 100% Spanish. Mundo Now as a company is a little bit different in that the company is targeted at the acculturated Hispanic. So although we do have first-generation individuals visiting Mundo Now, the majority in our research has shown that the majority of individuals coming to Mundo Now might be second-generation, third-generation bilingual. So Mundo, out of our competitive set, was the first company to launch a English template on its Spanish language site. Mundo, we don't have a long-form video strategy per se. That's not to say it won't exist in the future. I would say that Mundo is a great example of a multicultural company that is thinking about potentially what can be done in video and how best to tackle it. We do have some key projects going on at Mundo Now, including Mobilize the Vote, Mobilize the Latino Vote. So there's some kind of movement happening. Again, Simon, we talked about the scale of the Hispanic segment. Given the size of Mundo, we are the third largest. There's not that many Hispanic publishers in this country. Televisa and Telemundo, number one and two. We're a number three, but at a number three, we still do have a tremendous amount of reach across the country. One last thing I'll say about Mundo is that our competitors tend to be very focused on the Mexican market. We actually have representation from other geos as well. Our largest growing segment of traffic is actually from Central and South America, so there's a different kind of a demographic perspective there too.
And for those of you that missed our news notes section the first hour, Telemundo announced earlier today that they're launching a Spanish language all news network. Noticias Telemundo Ahora, that's Telemundo News Now. It will start in May. They'll have at least 5 hours of original news content devoted to major news coverage. They'll have other things too. They probably will also present their broadcast programming on the Telemundo network and other places. Again, more details about the service closer to its launch in May, probably around the time of the big upfront week where Telemundo, along with other aspects of NBC Universal, will, and also Televisa Univision, other services will also be announced themselves. By the way, are there plans for the Advocate Channel to be part of the upfronts or new fronts, do an event or do a press conference, let's say, with the press here in New York or elsewhere to showcase here's what we've got right now in terms of original content and here's what we want to do?
Yeah, absolutely. For folks that don't know, the Advocate Channel is still very new, hot off the presses. In addition to that, we're trying to amplify the Advocate Channel across multiple tentpole events. The Cannes Lions Festival is upcoming. There's that. There is the LGBTQ Plus Unleashed, so that's Wesley's company. It's kind of like the South by Southwest, but for the LGBTQ community in September out of Dallas. But yes, there is a trajectory for us to get involved in that type of thing. Simon, that will be a function of as our production plans come into more focus for 2025, I would say that would dictate how we get involved in these various, given the multitude of different things we could get involved in, which ones we do. But that is definitely on the radar.
Mm-hmm. You also have two organizations that are now working with a lot of programming services available on smart TV sets and smart devices, especially ones that are organized or put together by organizations of color, LGBT community, et cetera, et cetera. There's the Streaming Innovation Alliance. There's also the Independent Streaming Alliance. Any thoughts about getting involved with them or encouraging Advocate Channel and the other TV services you're repping to get involved with them?
Yeah, I think so. I think so, Simon. In general, what we are wanting to do is we're wanting to be a leader in this space, the multicultural space, the space that is skewing towards LGBTQ and multicultural, the intersectionality that we talked about. I think down the line, too, we'd be very open to working with other folks in the space, maybe smaller LGBTQ publishers that don't have as much content to kind of pool their content in with ours. One company worth noting is Gray Jones. If folks don't know them, they actually have a big event they do around the gaming vertical. So no pun on words, but gay gaming. They are owners of the Gaming Awards. Gaming and geek culture is a huge growing segment within LGBTQ, but that's an example of content that we can pull in. There's other examples of independent film creators within the LGBTQ community that we want to pull into the catalog perhaps at some point. So I would say everything is rapidly evolving right now, but nothing is out of the realm of possibility. We're trying to keep all options and consider all options and keep everything open at this moment.
George Manny is the co-founder and chief executive officer of Infinity Partnerships, working with the Advocate Channel, which is available on smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles, as well as other services as well, current and future. He joins us live from Hudson, New York this half hour right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Happy year aboard as well as we kick off the first full week of March 2024. Tom, I'm with you live from the Big Apple, 53 degrees, top of the hour. We want to hear you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906. We'll use that chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up in our final half hour, we'll be joined live from Los Angeles by Sean Lachlan, the executive producer of Deal No Deal Island, which has its second episode tonight on your local NBC station. He also is one of the key executives at the company that makes Deal No Deal, Animal Shine North America. And we'll find out what else they've got in their kit bag in times to come. That's in our final half hour. Plus, we've got our classic trivia question of the week, brand new question we introduced in our first hour. We'll have another chance for you to check it out, and you might become our first Tomorrow Be Televised winner of in the trivia category of 2024, 7 prizes in play, so be around for that. We'll let you know that we will definitely be with you Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific. We may be with you midweek with a special episode. Keep posted on our social media sites for the news, and we want you to know that next week we'll be on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and our lead guest on next Wednesday episode will be the author of the book Manhunt, The 12-Day Chase for Lincoln's Killer, that is now being made into an Apple TV Plus miniseries. It's called Manhunt. James Swanson will join us. He not only is the author of the book, he's also executive producer on the series. He'll be with us, our first guest, Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised exclusively. He's also the author of the brand-new book, The Deerfield Massacre, The Surprise Attack, Forced March, and The Fight for Survival in Early America. I'm going to offer a copy of this book as an upcoming classic trivia prize. James Swanson, next Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here exclusively on Tomorrow Be Televised. George, is your organization working with independent filmmakers as well as series makers to try to get their plumbing on the air somewhere?
Yeah, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that, Simon. So I was actually having a convo earlier today. His name is Wesley Smoot. He's the owner of LGBTQ Unleashed. That is the film and festival that we just talked about, kind of like South by Southwest, but targeted towards the LGBTQ community. So part of his festival includes independent film creators, and there had been convos before we started to help Equal Pride with this project around them collaborating specifically with regard to these indie filmmakers and independent LGBTQ filmmakers, how they could obtain access to the Advocate Channel. So those convos are ongoing because from our standpoint, doing the strategy and helping with the strategy for this channel, my objective and Amanda's objective is to have as much a diversity of content. What we want is we love the Advocates, which is multicultural lifestyle segment. So that's the headline show. What we want to do is we want to supplement it with things like perhaps independent filmmakers from Wesley's festival, where we allow these independent filmmakers access to these endpoints we have, like Amazon, and able to amplify them. Ultimately, what we're trying to do is we're trying to uplift the entire community and give folks that might not ordinarily have access to get onto these platforms with that access, and using the Advocates brand name and the influence that we have in the market to make that happen.
Has this festival, George, have any thoughts about opening their competition to TV series pilots, the way that Tribeca has, Bentonville, Gina Davis' festival, Dancing with Film Los Angeles, and other festivals that are devoted largely to film have, as well as the number of TV festivals that are going on. So, but we should point out South by Southwest has a TV pilot festival. I believe it's the first or second time they're doing that. But you also have festivals like Series Fest in Denver. You have Catalyst, which will be doing 3 festivals this fall, one in Nashville, Tennessee, one in Duluth, Minnesota, and one, I believe, elsewhere in the nation. And you've got other festivals. You just had ATV in Atlanta. ATX is coming in Austin, Texas. Are these folks thinking about opening things up to TV series pilot makers?
Yeah, you know, this festival was year number one last year, and it was a huge success. So we're Wesley and team are planning for year two. And that is something that I believe he has considered and would be of interest. You know, doing these festivals, I think year one is always the hardest, where that's proving out. Now that it's been proven out, there's room to expand. But, yeah, he, I'm sure, has this on his mind. And it's funny that we actually had a chat about something different earlier today, which was related to activating the queer gaming culture in a particular way within the festival itself. But, you know, he has a commitment to independent content creators generally, and I would imagine that that would be a direction that would be something he would be very interested in and probably will entertain very, very seriously.
We talked last half hour about the Growth Fronts event here in New York last week, last Wednesday and Thursday. More media organizations participated. 75 had the opportunity to meet directly in one-on-one meetings with advertisers and ad agencies and media buyers. First year last year was 40, so it was nearly double. They could have had many, many more if it were not for the fact that the facility could not hold everybody. And I understand that from the organizers. We hope to have the organizers, by the way, on our episode Friday. We're working that out. But it went from having about 500-plus meetings last year to nearly 1,500 this year. What kind of feedback did you get from the event?
Yeah, you know what? We got great feedback from the Equal Pride team that was on the ground. We were not on the ground, but the team that we work with at the Advocate Channel was on the ground. They said it was a great convo. They had amazing energy from the different conversations that were had. And I think there was a lot of excitement as to what would be the openness that folks had to talk to everybody, including the Advocate Channel, in a way that it was different maybe than previously. It was interesting. We spoke to the team soon after the event, and they were there. We actually talked to the team day after the event, and they were very, very excited, and they said it was one of the best, most productive conferences in New York that they had been to.
What other TV services are you working with or are you about to work with? Anything you can tell us on that front?
We can't disclose anything at this moment on that front, but we do work with other folks on the advertiser front, so folks that are looking to distribute their shows on our various clients. So that's another exciting part of the business. But I would say, Simon, stay tuned. There may have been some Easter eggs that were inputted earlier in the convo. You will see a series of kind of press releases from us at Infinity. We have a new partner in the LGBTQ space that will be announced over the next 2 weeks. So I would say hurry up and wait, but there'll be a lot coming from us over the next few weeks and definitely through the remainder of this year.
Mm-hmm. Something that wasn't showcased at the Growth Fronts, and I was shocked it wasn't, was the emerging trend of interactive advertising and shoppable ads. It is very clear that because of the fact that smart TV sets and devices have now reached critical mass with AI, artificial intelligence software built in, which allows you to use an audio service like Siri or Alexa or Google Assistant to control the set with your voice, order products and services, do all sorts of things, that that was not discussed. Because it looks like that marketplace, that video commerce marketplace, is about to break loose. Obviously, everybody's watching what Walmart is going to do with Vizio, the smart TV set maker, based on the deal that they announced and made public last week. There's talk about other possibilities in terms of combinations between smart TV set or device or multi-channel bundle and the retailer. Obviously, we're watching what Amazon is going to do, and Amazon's going to be a major player in the upfront this year for the very first time, that big upfront week in mid-May. Are you starting to get any feedback about that, about the interest level with Advocate Channel in terms of getting involved with shoppable ads, where they can maybe make extra revenue by getting some income off the products and services that that viewers decide to get through the service?
Yeah, shoppable ads. So, Simon, I'm going to answer this question from a few different angles. So shoppable ads, for sure. There is incremental value somebody like an Advocate Channel could get from shoppable ads. With that said, the the main beneficiary of the shoppable ads are going to be the individuals that own the closed loop, right? Back to your point about Walmart and Vizio, the reason that all these transactions are happening is given how difficult it is just to attribute any type of data attribution across the different, in-store to online to TV, that is ultimately, in our opinion, where this is really going to blow up, because you have, like, Walmart competing with Amazon. Walmart has a little bit of an advantage in that they have physical stores, which Amazon does not have. I think the space is still very new, and from everything that we have seen, being at the Cannes Lions Festival last year, there was some commerce talks. The space is still extremely new. I think there is some trepidation with regard to privacy and then all these different privacy regulations that are taking form within every different state from California to Washington. And so I think as a result of many different things, folks are moving slowly, but it certainly is what folks have been talking about for the past year and a half. There has not been that much execution yet, which I believe is why you probably didn't hear too much about it at the growth fronts that you were at in New York. But from everything that we can see, that is going to be the major, major news and technology enhancement over the next year and a half to 2 years, I would say. And it's going to be led by the actual individuals that have access to the data within the connected televisions themselves, which is why, again, you see these companies that are actually buying the TV manufacturers.
Yeah. By the way, you mentioned Amazon last episode. How are you working with Amazon, if so?
Yeah, we work with Amazon. So the Advocate Channel is actually available on Fire TV channels and News by Fire TV app. So if you go into the Fire TV channels, News by Fire TV app, you will be able to find the Advocate Channel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the things I wanted to get to is, how do you think about the whole issue of artificial intelligence as a way to generate content, whether it's done by a content creator or by the viewer? You mentioned Amazon Fire TV. Last fall, they announced that they are allowing, using generative AI, the opportunity for people who have Amazon Fire TV to create their own video art gallery or even create their own video art and display it on the TV set. OG, by the way, also now has that capability of video art. What do you think about AI and the role it could play ultimately in how TV is created and produced?
Yeah, that's a multi-edged question, Simon. What we think of AI, what Amanda and I have talked about, is right now AI is not really AI. It's kind of very advanced database matching, I would say, in it. But more and more, I am seeing content written by or content on TV that was built using AI. You are hearing more and more about newsrooms relying on AI to a certain extent. What I believe is that it's still very much in its infancy, and a lot will develop as we look forward. But what folks are calling AI at this moment, I think, is probably best described as just very, very advanced ways of matching up different databases faster than any human can do so. And as a result of being able to do that, essentially coming up with very convincing answers to whatever question is asked of the AI engine. With regard to television, I think it's still too early to know.
Mm-hmm. It's certainly going to be a very interesting adventure, one way or the other, to see how this all develops. And it looks like it's developing quicker than any of us can imagine, and then so. Again, if you want to find out more about the Advocate Channel and Infinity Partnership's role in that service, it's available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. Here's where you go. First of all, on the network, it's advocateschannel.com. That's advocateschannel.com. And for more about George's organization, go to infinitypartnership.com. It's infinitypartnership.com. We'll keep an eye on how the Advocate Channel does with its programming, and we'll certainly invite people with Equal Pride and some of the content creators for that service to come on future episodes of this program. George Manny, co-founder and chief executive officer of Infinity Partnership, thank you for being on the program. Thank you for the extra time last half hour. It's been a great pleasure talking to you, and let's continue to be in touch as this world that you're helping to create goes forward.
Thank you, Simon. It was great to be on.
An absolute pleasure. Take care. Have a super week.
You too. Bye-bye.
George Manny, co-founder and chief executive officer of Vinny Partnerships, joining us live from Hudson, New York. When we come back, the executive producer of Deal No Deal Island that premieres in its regular time period tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on local NBC station, Sean Lachlan will be with us. He's also senior vice president at the company that makes the show, Endemol Shine North America. That's coming your way from Los Angeles as we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, figure.com, and tune.com. Together, reaching over 100 million listeners around the world every month and growing. If you're interested in all things paranormal, check out the Ken Hundo Show on BTR tomorrow, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. That's all things paranormal and the occult on the Ken Hundo Show. That's tomorrow, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget Best BTR all the time on YouTube. Welcome back to our final half hour of this two-hour edition of Bobby Televised, coming your way on a great Monday afternoon here in New York and across the country and around the world on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and TuneIn Radio. Simon, I'm here with you from NYC, 52 degrees at the bottom of the hour. Another great guest coming away in the half hour ahead, and we invite you to be part of the program. All you got to do is pick up the phone and dial in at 646-652-2906 or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Also coming up before we leave you at the top of the hour, our latest classic trivia question, 7 prizes in play. You could still be our first Tommy Televised trivia winner of 2024, so stick around as well for that. Now, if you have been under a rock, or maybe you or someone you know on a desert island or another kind of island, well, guess what? Deal No Deal is back. That's right. One of the most unique game shows, social experiments, whatever you want to call it, of recent decades. It's back on the network that first brought it to U.S. customers. That's NBC. And now it's Deal No Deal Island. And it's on your way tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific time, on your local NBC station. Joining us live from Los Angeles in an internet radio exclusive, the executive producer of Deal No Deal and senior vice president at the parent company of the show that makes, of the service that makes it, or I should say the promoting company that makes it, Endemol Shine North America, Sean Lachlan. Sean, great to have you here.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sean, what's the reaction so far to this new iteration of Deal No Deal?
So far, the reaction's been great. We premiered last week to really strong ratings, thanks to a great lead-in from The Voice. We've been, you know, really popular online, thanks to, you know, some of our the great gameplay and the strategy. People are excited to see Deal back, but to see it in a kind of a different way. They're excited to see, you know, Boss and Rob play a different game, and you know, we've gotten just good feedback all around, and even we've gotten a couple really great critical reviews. We were called the Cool Ranch Doritos of television shows. In every way, a subtle improvement on the original.
Well, have Doritos responded saying, hey, we like that terminology for your show. Let's advertise on it.
Exactly, yeah, hopefully.
It's been several years since the last iteration of Deal No Deal on CNBC. What have you and your fellow Endemol Shine people conclude the time is right to bring it back, and bring it back in maybe its most unique way yet?
Look, I think what, you know, as so much is shifting around in the television landscape, people like both nostalgic but yet brand new. And about 18 months ago, you know, in developing another show, somebody said, oh, this would have been better if we could have called it Deal or No Deal Island. And that kind of just lit a match in that, you know, we just started to think about, oh, what if we brought Deal or No Deal back in some kind of, not as a reboot, but as a reimagination? And, you know, we mentioned it to NBC. They were very much on board. And together we developed it over a course of 5 months before they picked it up. And then another couple months of pre-production, and we were shooting. It was one of those really magical experiences where just one word kind of really changed the whole game.
Mm-hmm. In the past, we've had Scott St. John, the original executive producer of Deal No Deal. We've got Jack Martin on, who just did Raid the Cage for CBS. He's now doing After Midnight, mm-hmm. which is off to the races so far on CBS, following Colbert's late night show. And we've asked him, you know, why has Deal No Deal become the kind of show that it turned out to be? because it really struck a nerve. It was more than just a game show. To a lot of people, yeah. It's a social experiment. To a lot of people, it struck a nerve. And when I asked Scott St. John about it, I think one of the things he said was it was the backstory, the fact that you had these very interesting players who were really putting it all on the line to see how far they could go in terms of the money they could make off the case.
Yeah, you were, you know, it came around the time of Millionaire, where we transitioned from multiplayer game shows to single player game shows, where you were really following the journey of one person as they hit the highs and lows of potentially winning life changing money, and no show had kind of more ups and downs than Deal or No Deal, and that was just one of the things that made it so spectacular and really resonate with people.
So for those people who didn't see the first episode last week, explain how this iteration of Deal or No Deal works. It's on an island. You have a set number mm-hmm. of contestants, and take it from there.
So, yeah. Basically, you know, Deal or No Deal was a studio game show where an unseen character named the banker, you know, was tempting the contestants. And now we've transferred it and made it in a kind of epic island adventure. Our mysterious banker has invited 13 strangers to his private island in the hopes of finding the ultimate opponent for his signature game of Deal or No Deal. His island is very luxurious and might seem like a vacation at first, but the contestants still soon realize that nothing is going to be easy. The banker's test now has three parts, which kind of map the original parts of the Deal or No Deal game show. First is getting the cases. Instead of the cases being presented to you in a studio with lovely models, it's all cozy and comfy, our contestants have to go through the banker's twisted excursions in order to get the cases that they're going to play the game of Deal or No Deal with. Then we have they also determine who's going to be in control of the game and who's could potentially be up for elimination. We then have a really cool social game back at camp. And this is a very luxurious camp. You know, it's not Survivor. These people were, you know, like living in pretty good luxury, but the social game and the plots were very intense as they tried to decide who they were going to put up to play Deal or No Deal against the banker each night. And then we would head to our temple, which is sort of like our TV studio in the jungle. That's where the banker would have his games of Deal or No Deal. And the player chosen would be playing Deal or No Deal to add money to the group case, which is the group pot, which is that one person was going to play for at the end of the season. But they were also playing for their survival because now Deal had become kind of our ultimate elimination mechanism. And if you, you know, it's a historical part of Deal or No Deal that after you make a deal, they open the case that you have to see if you made a good deal or a bad deal. It didn't have any really effect on the game. It was just like a fun reveal at the end of each game. Now it determines who's going to get to stay in the game and who's going to be eliminated. So if the contestant at the end of the show has made a good deal, which means that they took an offer for more than the case that they open, then they get to stay in the game and pick who's eliminated. But if they made a bad deal, they themselves are eliminated.
And one of the new wrinkles here is that for the first time, there is what we would call in game show terms the rolling jackpot, where rather than you have a set big amount you can win, of course, for many years it was $1 million, this time around the jackpot increases from episode to episode depending on how the main game works out.
Exactly. They kept at, you know, there's up to $200 million on the island, and all the contestants are competing to add money to that final case, which will become the biggest case on the board in the final game of Deal or No Deal at the end of the season.
We are speaking with Sean Lachlan. He is the executive producer of Deal or No Deal Island, which is now on Monday nights, 10 p.m. Pacific time, your local NBC station. He's also one of the senior vice presidents at the company that makes Deal or No Deal from the get-go, Endemol Shine North America. Joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour right here on Tamavi Televised. Tom and I'm with you live from the other side of the U.S. of A. Whoever you are, 52 degrees, bottom of the hour. We want you involved in the conversation, so pick up the phone and call 646-652-2906 or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And coming up before the top of the hour, if you missed it last hour, our classic trivia question, brand new question for you. First with the correct answer, you win 7 prizes that have been in play for quite a while. So maybe today might be your day to strike it big with our classic trivia question of the week. You'll hear it before we leave you at the top of the hour. When you and your colleagues were discussing how to do this new version of D&D, did you have any issues about going a certain way rather than another way?
You know, we did lots of extensive testing, trying out the game with different rules and different parameters, and we went through many different formats in sort of our development phase, trying to decide, balancing what's going to make the best game in each episode versus what's going to make the best game over the season. The thing that we hit on the last in the process was this turning good deal, bad deal into our way of eliminating, and it was the key to kind of tying the whole show together. Mm-hmm. And it, because
and
kind of up
of
until that point, everything felt a little bit separate. Up until that point, everything felt a little bit separated. But this made sure that basically each part of the show was united.
Mm-hmm. And talk about your brand new host, Joe Mantonello. He's got a very interesting background himself, and he is the new Howie Mandel. And Howie Mandel, by the way, is one of your executive producers too.
He is, yes. You know, as we ventured into a whole new place and a whole new format, it might be based on the same iconic question, but we wanted a new voice to kind of really to add something different to the show. And if we're going to do an adventure, who better than Joe Manganiello? He's, he's been a star of action movies and the Magic Mike series, and he's in the original Spider-Man. He's just really an all-round kind of amazing figure that feels like the perfect emissary for the banker in this really heightened experience. And he was truly terrific. You know, it's really hard to imagine anyone else saying Deal or No Deal other than Howie Mandel. But I think Joe did such a great job really making the role his own. And as you'll see in every episode, he really is able to do something different. You know, he really befriended all of the contestants. You know, one of the most fun things was as they were shooting, there's occasional stop downs, particularly during the games of Deal or No Deal, and how he would just chat with the contestants, and really he found something of that he bonded with each of them over, which was really, really interesting. You know, he and Aaron, who is the character who played an accountant who played Deal or No Deal in the first episode, both bonded over Magic the Gathering cards as he was playing. You know, Aaron's playing for his life in this game, and when, you know, rather than let him get nervous when they weren't filming, Joe was able to talk to him and really keep him motivated and excited to keep playing.
When you bring somebody like Joe in to do what Howie did in the original versions, as well as develop his own personality, how do you work with a talent like that so that he's able to have the gravitas that Howie brought to Deal or No Deal, but at the same time, we get his personality, we get his self-expression coming out?
Yeah. Well, so much of that is, you know, just him. You know, he has that natural charisma that just kind of can't be contained. And then the other part is making sure that he is as familiar as possible with the mechanics of the games. So we did both run-throughs here in our offices, just in our big kitchen area, letting him try out the hosting the game, as well as a bunch of rehearsals when they all got to the location to shoot the show. And just through that process, plus, you know, determining a great wardrobe, that really allows him to kind of just put his stamp on the show.
Where did you find the island, and how long did it take to turn the island into the place where you take the series?
You know, we had a great location scouting company that really scoured the globe for the perfect island. Globally, Banijay, which is the parent company of Endemol Shine North America, makes Survivor in every other territory but America. And so we had a lot of institutional knowledge that we were able to share with the search. They after an extensive search, they settled on Panama. And, you know, it took, I'd say, a good 2 to 3, probably about 12 weeks to really, you know, construct the set, get all the challenges down, and be ready to film.
One of the most interesting things, Sean, about this new series is the casting, that among the contestants, you have a former Survivor or Survivor-type show, Rob Mariano. But the other thing was very interesting is you have one of the former models, Claudia Jordan. You used to have case number one. And, of course, the models were a big thing about Deal No Deal. Was there any back and forth about having one of the former Deal No Deal models be a contestant here?
Someone tied to the original show was always, whether it was going to be a former contestant or one of the models, was something that we always envisioned during the casting process. We wanted that kind of, you know, you want to be able to have some ties to the originals because that's part of what people might be tuning in for. And you wanted people to be able to see it in a new light. You know, obviously, the models were such a prominent feature of the old show. To have then that as Claudia says herself, you know, she's always wanted to try to play Deal or No Deal. And so there's almost like a wish fulfillment aspect to her being part of the cast. And she's really terrific. She's such a great personality. She almost adds that, like, wise sage of experience to the show. And so that was really terrific having her.
And that was another reason why Deal No Deal made it. It was because of the fact that the models not only had so much personality, but because they did not know what was in the cases from game to game.
Right.
They were as equally surprised or delighted with what the contestant picked or didn't pick as the contestant himself.
Exactly. And that's still true now.
One of my favorite episodes,
Joe didn't know what was in the cases.
Was, remember the All About the Fro episode with the model that, the Afro? And it was like the theme of the show was all about the fro, and ultimately all the models wore the afro. One of my favorite episodes of Deal No Deal. Always a great one.
Yeah, that was.
Mm-hmm. Have you heard from former contestants who wish they could have been part of this?
I personally have not, but I think some have reached out to our casting director. And, you know, as we go forth and hopefully with multiple seasons, perhaps we would cast a former contestant in another season.
Sean Lachlan is the executive producer of Deal No Deal Island, which is now on Monday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time in your local NBC station. He's also senior vice president of the production company that makes the show, Endemol Shine North America. We'll talk about what they're up to in a few moments. And if you have a question or comment on our remaining minutes with Sean, make a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Sean, what has surprised you about the reaction so far to Deal No Deal Island?
You know, the funniest part of the reaction was in the build up to the show. How many people remarked that it felt like something that Liz Lemon would have come up with on 30 Rock as a joke, and so we felt like that was a really fun thing because. And took that as a compliment because anything Tina Fey would come up with is great. We even on Twitter, the NBC account and the 30 Rock account had a little bit of an exchange about it. And that's been kind of great. But even those people who kind of remarked about that on the show previously, a lot of them have followed up with saying, being kind of like, wowed about how much they actually liked the show, and see its value.
Mm-hmm.
Also,
in
Boston
series,
Rob has more fans than any. I'm sorry, Boston Rob is so popular. That is another thing that has surprised me.
Oftentimes in the original series, the banker would rather than offer a cash thing to get out of the deal. They would offer a special kind of prize that was personalized for the contestant. I remember the contestant that had the opportunity, if he got out of the game, to set up this basketball court on his home country of Trinidad and Tobago. And he took the deal because he felt, you know, I have an opportunity here that's priceless. I have an opportunity to give back to where I was born and maybe help kids to develop themselves as human beings with a basketball court. It was an amazing moment. It was one of the best moments in the entire series. Is that going to happen, by the way, in future episodes where, let's say, the banker will offer more than just cash, do a personalized prize to any of the contestants?
As you saw in the first episode, personal offers, because remember, this is a group game, at least in the beginning, became part of the episode in that, you know, the banker incentivized Kim to go out in search of the red case. I could see excuse me, Simon. Hold on one second. Sorry about that.
No problem.
Simon. I'm going to have to.
Okay, go ahead.
Simon, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to jump off. Feel a little bit ill.
Okay, I totally understand. We'll just say that Deal No Deal Island coming your way tonight, 10 p.m. Pacific time. You're looking at the station for details.
Bye-bye.
Go to NBC.com and AnimalShine.com. Sean, thank you very much for coming on, making the time with us. Congratulations. Hopefully a great long run with this version of Deal No Deal. And thank you again for being with us. And we apologize that he had to jump off earlier than we thought, but we do appreciate the time. We appreciate Sean. Sean Lachlan joining us live from Los Angeles right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. We come back. Classic trivia question again. We'll do that after we have these words from the fine folks at Wild. Now, are you out to make your personal well-being more natural and eco-friendly? Then give Wild a try. Wild deodorant is natural ingredients that freshen you anytime for any occasion. And Wild comes in a variety of scent and color combinations, such as jasmine and mandarin blossom, or fresh cotton and sea salt. I use Wild regularly. It's a wonderful product. Comes in a great refillable case so that as you finish one version, you get another version in. Makes it very easy to go. It's refillable with a twist at the bottom. It gets the deodorant out easy. Put it on. Doesn't stick. Doesn't smell. It's great. And wonderful, wonderful, wonderful refreshing deal with Wild. And, you know, if you want a refill, it can get delivered right to your door. So, how about going Wild today? And you do with a special discount, 25% off your first order. Just use the promo code SimonApple04 at checkout. With SimonApple04, in order to do it, you go to wearewild.com, use that promo code, and you get 25% off your first order. So check out Wild. It is a reusable, refillable, natural deodorant that's kind to your body and the planet. All right, before we leave you, one more time, in case you missed the last hour, here is our new Tomorrow Be Televised Classic Trivia Question. And if you're first with the correct answer, you'll win 7 great prizes, including the 2024 American Express Pocket Calendar, the free Uber card from AMC Networks, free Redbox Movie Night from Crackle Connect, 2 wonderful music CDs, Chicago's Greatest Hits, Lifetime Women in Rock, and 2 great books, Apocalypse Television, The Day After, and How the Day After Helped End the Cold War by David Craig of USC, and from Jeff Melvoin, the former writer, producer, showrunner of Northern Exposure, a classic show from the 80s, 90s on CBS. It's Running the Show, Television from the Inside. All that can be yours if you know the answer to this question. Who was the voice of Mr. Ed on Mr. Ed? Yes, the talking horse. That was a very popular CBS attraction in the 1960s. The horse, of course, according to the theme song of that great show. Who was the voice of Mr. Ed on Mr. Ed? It was not Alan Young, the star. It was a different person. Who is the voice of Mr. Ed on Mr. Ed? If you don't know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember to enclose your name and where you're mailing from. First with the correct answer, you win. And in case we don't get a winner today, we'll post a question tomorrow morning, Tuesday, on Facebook and X or Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, X or Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's Facebook, X or Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, X or Twitter at UBC Simon TWT. One last time, Our new question, who is the voice of Mr. Ed on Mr. Ed? Get in the game today, and, of course, all the very best. I want to thank all of our guests for being here today, all of you for tuning in. Once again, thank you to our brand-new podcast by True Fans and all of you on that wonderful podcast venue for coming aboard our wonderful lineup of 46 great podcast destinations with this episode. We'll be back with you for sure on Friday, maybe on Thursday, so keep checking us out on social media, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Facebook and X or Twitter for all the details. And remember, you can also catch me Wednesday on Sports Newswire in the flesh from New York. That's Sports Newswire, the daily sports news information show. We talk TV, sports, and other things too. 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific on Sports Grid Network. Available on smart TV sets, devices, Amazon Freebie, Local Now, and other multi-channel bundles. Love hearing from you. What did you think about our program today? What's your thoughts where TV is at and where it's going? And one more time, I want to let you know, for those of you that joined us this past hour, Larry Adams, the founder and chief executive of Black Fam, that's the new service that launched a week ago today. Whoopi Goldberg's an equity partner and a creative consultant. He was not able to be with us today. We are going to reset him either for later this week or for next week at the latest. And if you want to find out more about that service, go to www.blackfam.tv. It's www.blkfam.tv. Love to hear you. What do you think about our program today? What's your thoughts on where TV is at and where it is going? Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to close your name and your mailing address. And you can also use it for our classic trivia question. Also for our regular feature, a show to know. Is there a TV show you like doesn't get enough attention? Want to give it the attention? And let's hear from you. So email me with all the information about the program and why we should showcase it on this program. And if we do, you get the credit. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Also find me on social media, Facebook and LinkedIn at Simon Applebaum. X or Twitter, UBC Simon TWBT. That's Facebook, LinkedIn, Simon Applebaum. X or Twitter, UBC Simon TWBT. However you communicate to me, I communicate back with you in 24 hours because guess what? What you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants. They are not say those of Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tuna Radio, and other carriers. Andy Cho is Blog Talk Radio's General Manager, Jay Sonnenberg, his content executive. Website is by On Podium. Guitarist Fakus is our web coordinator. Tomorrow We Televise is brought to you today by Wild, the reusable, refillable, natural joint that's kind to your body and the planet. And by BlendJet, the portable blender letting you make fresh smoothies, shakes, and mixed drinks on the go, wherever you go. For Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a wonderful rest of your Monday. Don't forget to catch me Wednesday morning, 11 a.m. Eastern Pacific for Sports Newswire on the Sports Grid Network. And then definitely Friday, maybe Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tune Radio, and all of our wonderful web and podcast destinations, including our newbie on the podcast side, True Fans. Whatever you're doing between now and then, make it safe. Please make a great view of those you love. If Super Tuesday is happening in your state tomorrow, please get out there and exercise your right to vote. Remember, there are people who are dying, fighting for the right you have a chance to exercise tomorrow. They don't have it. You do. So exercise your right to vote. And remember one other thing. Let there be peace on earth, and let it begin with you. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.